Good. How are you? You were not getting any sound out there, or were you getting some sound?
I wasn't for about a minute, and then I came back.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay. Well, then I guess I'm just going to start off real quickly. I just wanted to kind of talk about back on September 21st, I wrote a blog on the media cover-up, and I kind of want to go over that a little bit tonight because there's more coming out as we speak. And I wrote this on the 21st of September, and so if you all just bear with me, I'm going to give this a quick read-through. I never thought that I would live in an America where we have a media designed to spread propaganda instead of facts. I never thought Americans would allow this to happen to them, and I never thought Americans would fall for it hook, line, and sinker, but they have. I could cite many instances of this, but none could compare with the recent events in the Middle East. On September 11th, 2012, 11 years after the terrorists killed over 3,000 innocent men and women, America was attacked. For the first time since 1979, an American ambassador was killed in a foreign land. Front page and headline news, to be sure. Many unanswered questions for the media to delve into, such as the how and the why. Was there beefed up security in the light of the date? Was there any evidence suggesting this attack might happen? Imagine then my surprise to find instead a media frenzy attacking a presidential candidate who condemned a statement published repeatedly by the U.S. Embassy apologizing for the hurt feelings of radical Muslims. This story gets better. Our president then comes out on September 12th and again condemns an obscure video from YouTube, attacks Mitt Romney for politicizing the issue, and tries to appease the radical Muslims. At this point, I'm just thinking, what? Am I the only one that sees the problem here? The issue is, and was, we were attacked by foreign accounts and intelligence accounts, a pre-planned attack on 9/11 in Libya. Not only were we attacked, but four Americans died in Libya alone, including our ambassador. As the pundits continue to decry the presidential candidate for the timing of his statement, riots erupted in 50 other countries. Our administration says these are protests against this obscure, badly produced video, not America. Yet, the protesters are burning pictures of our president and our flag, while chanting, and they were chanting, "Obama, Obama, we are Osama, and death to America." Does that seem to be against a video? The administration continues to deny the facts for 9 days. Where is the media? Where are the real journalists? Where are the questions? My fellow Americans, we are being fed pure propaganda by the elite news media. They are trying to distract us from the truth. This administration has failed us with its foreign policy of appeasement. This administration has failed us economically. And this administration will not be held accountable by the news media. Is this what we want in America? Do we want to be lied to and distracted from the truth? Do we want to be led like sheep to the slaughter? It is time to stop fooling ourselves and understand the reality of what our media has become and to start researching the truth on our own. For as long as we continue to give them the ratings and buy into the lies, we will never be free. Okay, and then on the 1st, I actually updated this, I'm not exactly sure when, but today I update this blog with sobering information for my fellow Americans. The truth is coming to light now. The administration has had requests from the embassy in Libya for more security in Benghazi, and the request was denied. So instead of owning up to the fact that this administration and its appointees failed to protect Americans overseas, they initiated a cover-up. A cover-up that propagated by the mainstream media and all the Democrats. A cover-up that incited riots in over 50 countries, and anti-American sentiment increased in the Arab communities and led to calls for limiting free speech, even here in America, Dearborn, Michigan, where they were protesting against democracy. Today, the White House continues to have no comment, saying an FBI investigation is underway. However, and at this point, the FBI is not in Benghazi. It's not safe in Benghazi. In other words, the Obama administration is covering up their failure to win an election. And then I actually provide the oversight. This is a House Oversight Committee that sent a letter to Hillary Clinton on the 2nd of October. And it says that they had been conducting an investigation of the events surrounding the assassination of Christopher Stevens, the U.S. ambassador to Libya, on September 11th. And they had information by individuals with direct knowledge that the attack was the latest in a long line of attacks on Western diplomats and officials in Libya. And they actually have the dates of these attacks, April 6, 2012, two Libyans through an IED over the consulate fence, April 11, 2012, Benghazi, a gun battle between unidentified armed group and forces loyal to the Transitional National Council occurred just down the street from the consulate. April 25th, Tripoli. Guard forces traveling in plated vehicles was detained, and his radio was seized. April 26, 2012, Benghazi. A U.S. Foreign Service officer was evacuated by members of the 17th February Martyrs Brigade. April 27, 2012, Benghazi. South African contractors were kidnapped by armed men while walking through a residential area of Benghazi. They were released unharmed. May 1, 2012, Tripoli. His car, a local guards force, was carjacked. He was beaten and detained by a group of armed youth. May 22, 2012, Benghazi. Two RPG rounds were fired at the Benghazi Office of the International Committee of the Red Cross. June 2012, Ambassador Stevens was in the habit of taking early morning runs around Tripoli, along with members of his security guard, according to sources. Sometime in June, a posting on a pro-Gaddafi page trumpeted those runs and directed a threat against Ambassador Stevens, along with a stock photo of him. It was reported that after stopping these morning runs for about a week, the ambassador resumed them. June 6, 2012, under the cover of darkness in Benghazi, assailants placed an IED on the north gate of the consulate in Benghazi, blowing a hole in the security perimeter that was described by one individual as big enough for 40 men to go through. June 10, 2012, a two-car convoy carrying the British ambassador to Libya from a conference on reforming Libya military laws was attacked in broad daylight by a militant with an RPG. Late June 2012, the CRC building was attacked again, this time in broad daylight while people were inside. August 6, 2012. Armed assailants attempted to carjack a vehicle bearing diplomatic plates operated by U.S. security personnel. In September 11th, weeks before September 11th, the unarmed Libyan guard employed by British contractor Blue Mountain Group were being warned by their family members to quit their jobs guarding consulate Benghazi because there were rumors in the community of an impending attack. And this is a letter that was sent to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And then today, we actually have a name to the officer in the security guard, Eric Nordstrom, who said he was told not to ask for any increased security because they weren't going to get it. And this was in August because they were rotating in an elite guard of 16 and they wanted to stay because the conditions on the ground were critical, and they were denied twice. They asked twice, and they were told not to ask again. This, my friends, is unacceptable. This is a cover-up of the worst form, blaming this on a video. This is not a political event. This speaks to the national security of our country. This speaks to the failure of the foreign policy of appeasement on the part of this administration. This speaks to the well-being of the United States and where our priorities should be. Because on these same days, our president did not stop his fundraising. 50 riots, okay? Our president went on The View and didn't go to the United Nations to speak with the world leaders. Israel is in dire straits. Syria and has been firing rockets into Turkey. Turkey has returned fire. We have a totally destabilized region with a possibility of all-out regional war with Russia involved and Iran involved. And this, they're trying to say, the Republicans are trying to politicize this. And this, my friend, is not about politics. It's about national security. And we need to wake up and we need to see that this is not the right way for our country to go. And I don't know, Billy, if you've discussed this because I've been kind of out of the loop for a while, had a cold, couldn't talk, and so I'm just getting back on the air and in the swing of things. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that or...
Well, just briefly, you know, I think that you're right 100% that this is all national security issues, but who's public or who's politicizing it is President Obama. He is trying to basically claim, I killed Osama bin Laden, therefore Al-Qaeda is dead, which is not true. And I'm sorry, but liberals actually are buying it. Liberals believe that if they hear anything about Al-Qaeda having anything to do with Libya, they laugh. They say Al-Qaeda doesn't exist. But they're wrong. Al-Qaeda is very much alive. I mean, they said there's 1.5 million Osamas. Come get us all. That's what they were chasing.
Right.
That is a scary thought altogether, that we have so many people in this country who are willing to laugh at it and say it's a lie just because they won't pay attention to the truth, all because they want to believe President Obama over the truth. They say when President Obama speaks, you know, it's like listening to God. And it's ridiculous. They literally will not believe the truth.
And that's scary in and of itself when you elevate a man to the position to where, oh, he can do no wrong. You know, because, yes, we have our candidates, but I don't trust any of my candidates to not do something wrong. You know, we still have to watch what we're doing. You can't believe everything that comes out of their mouths. You know,
yeah.
You have to watch what they do and their actions that they do. And, you know, this is coming on top of the Fast and Furious debate where they actually sent a man to, what they sent him to, Iraq to get him out of the country so the Congress couldn't interview him because he had actually had ties to Eric Holder that could tie Eric Holder to the Fast and Furious, which if people don't know what that is, that's, the, you know, where our border agent was murdered by gun walking that this administration was perpetuating. And then they all want to blame Bush. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, did you see what Univision did with that? They had a wonderful, wonderful show on it, and they didn't accuse anybody, but they put out the facts. And
right.
It was absolutely 100% objective, but it didn't look good for Obama, I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah, and it was actually, you know, there was like, was it a wedding party or a graduation party of young people that was killed with those guns that walked into Mexico? And here, they don't think that we care about them because our government has done nothing but try to cover
them
up.
And
I don't care.
They covered the Mexico side of it.
Right, and I want to say to those people, if anybody is listening or can hear this, is that we do have sympathy for you, and we do understand the frustration because this is just as appalling to us as it is to them that this could even happen, that they could lose track of these thousands
of
guns.
That's even where the liberals are wrong with us on the Republican side, saying we don't care about Hispanics, we don't care about Mexico, and we don't care about those here undocumented workers and everything, because we simply don't want to just give them blanket amnesty. You know, it's not that we don't care about them. What
right.
It is if you're going to become a citizen of the United States, you need to care about the United States. You need
right.
to not be here working and sending your money back to your home country. You need to not be here working and just taking from American taxpayers while not committing a loyal stand to our nation. That's all I say.
Right.
And I've seen recently, I don't know if you saw the documentary, They Come to America. I actually just got it. And it's interesting. You buy one, you get two free. Because the guy can't get it actually produced by anybody. But it's an awesome documentary, and he talks with workers here from Mexico who are undocumented, and they're on work visas and everything, and all he does is he asks them, do you want to be United States citizens? Every one of them says, no, we don't. We make our money here, we send it back to our homeland. We make our money here, we send it back to our home in Mexico. When they were asked why, one of the guys actually had the audacity to say, well, right now, I work for America. One day, my son will own America. You know,
no.
So to speak. That kind of attitude.
Right.
And, like, wow, that was pretty enlightening.
Right, it is, actually. And here's the latest thing. I'm just getting this out tonight in this Benghazi stuff, so this is going to be interesting to say is that they were saying that they never said that attacks in Benghazi were a result of the video. And it's like, really? Because that's not what I heard.
Who said that?
It's somebody at the State Department. It was released by the AP. So we'll see what's going to come of that here. But I actually looked at the president's statement on Libya because this is so ridiculous. Anyway, this is what he had to say. He said, I strongly condemn the outrageous attacks on our diplomatic facility in Benghazi, which took the lives of 4 Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. Right now, the American people have the families of those we lost in our thoughts and prayers. They exemplified Americans' commitment to freedom, justice, and partnership with nations and people around the globe and stand in stark contrast to those who callously took their lives. I have directed my administration to provide all necessary resources to support the security of our personnel in Libya and to increase security at our diplomatic posts around the globe. While the United States rejects efforts to denigrate the religious beliefs of others, we must all unequivocally oppose the kind of senseless violence that took the lives of these public servants. Now, right there, that says he's blaming the video.
Right, so, and not only that, Hillary Clinton of the State Department did come out and she apologized over and over again. She said, I want to make this very clear that the government had nothing to do with this video. So please, please don't attack us anymore because we, the government, didn't do anything to harm you. We did not do anything with this video. It wasn't us in the government who had anything to do with it. Please, you know, she was whining and pleading that, you know, it wasn't anything in the government that did it, if you don't remember that. I mean, that was the same day.
Right, and then they took out ads in Pakistan, again, apologizing for the video. So what they actually did is they perpetuated the violence in the Middle East and the anti-American sentiment by trying to cover up their fallacies in not protecting our ambassador in Libya and wanting to blame it on this video. How did they think they were going to get away with this?
I don't know.
I mean, really.
They were hoping it wouldn't be known until after the election, probably.
Well, yeah, they're still trying to make that. They're still trying to say it's going to be November, but I think the media is kind of waking up a little bit and is going to get pushed before that.
They have a hearing about it tomorrow. I don't know if you saw Jason Chaffetz. He was today talking about his trip to Libya because he went there right after the thing took place.
Mm-hmm.
Once it was clear, once he got the clear to go there, he went there. He came back. And he said, you know what? The whole time I was there, nobody ever brought up the video. And every time he brought it up, they said, huh?
Yeah, what video are you talking about?
Yeah. So
there
is nothing. It had nothing at all to do with the damn video.
Right. And we need to make sure we keep pushing that narrative as they try to spin this. And I don't know how they're going to spin it, but they're going to try to spin it in some way.
I don't know if you saw Colonel Woods from Tripoli. He was originally in Tripoli. He was called out of there because they got memos from the State Department saying they were reducing Libya security. And this was like a week before, the month before. I don't remember if they said week or month. But the week or the month before this happened, he knew that there was going to be trouble because they had just had the England... there were threats on the ambassador from England's life.
Right.
He left. He left after he got those threats. But Chris Stevens, who wrote in his diary that he was afraid and asked for more security, was left there.
Right.
But I have to admit, there's one thing. I mean, it's not his own fault. I mean, but I do have to say the guy did, in many interviews, had said he loved it there. He loved what he was doing, and he didn't act in any way, shape, or form like he really was scared, but his journal is very contrary to that.
Right, and he was talking to this Eric Nordstrom and different people, and he was concerned, but I think he was trying his best to improve relations there, and obviously this was deeply felt in his heart, and so we don't want to blame the victim for something that, you know, if he needed to be protected, and he wasn't. And now some of the Democrats are trying to say it's because the Republicans said we had to cut our spending on our embassies. Now,
Nancy is right on top of that one.
Right, I know, and that's just crazy because you know the Republicans are all for protecting our people overseas, and the very next day Obama sent massive troops out to all the embassies. So you know very well right there that's a lie. So they just
guess what? Right now, because of the sequestration, as of this very moment, there are like I can't remember how many thousands of jobs that are actually they end as of December 31st of this year.
Right.
And they're supposed to give a 3-month notice, which
right.
the government is saying, oh, don't give the notice. And get this, this is the scariest part. If any of these workers sue because they didn't get their notice, the taxpayer will cover it.
Yeah, you know what John McCain has done? He's gotten together with some other senators and said, we are not going to pay for it. If you break the law, we will not cover you. So hopefully, who knows? But you know, you want to talk about politicizing. That's politicizing.
Absolutely.
You know, don't send out those notices that you're required to by law because, you know, it may not happen. How is it not going to happen? I'm echoing. I don't know why. I wasn't before. Now I am. But it's, you know, how is that not going to happen? Because so far this president has shown his inability to work with anybody in Congress, including his own party. He doesn't take their phone calls. You have to go through his chief of staff to get to him. He doesn't reach out to any members in Congress, Democrat or Republican. So how does he think he's going to get this taken care of? And this is a big part of the problem is his lack of leadership. You know, Bill Clinton was able to reach out to both sides of the party. Ronald Reagan was able to reach out across the aisles to both parties. You know, a true leader will find a way to get the business of the government done. And Barack Obama has done that.
Dare our government tell employers not to abide by the law.
Yeah, you can't.
How dare them?
They
have said, don't obey this law. This is law, but do not obey it, because if you don't obey it, who cares? The taxpayers got you covered.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've done the same thing with immigration. They've done the same thing with immigration, this White House. And this White House has sued our states, you know, and this White House continues to sue our states on the voter ID laws, which the Supreme Court ruled on in 2008, because we have it here in Indiana. And they said, it's not a hardship and it's not a burden. We've had it we've been doing it since before 2008. That's when it went to the Supreme Court.
I just my absentee ballot today, right? And you know what it asks for, the very first question?
What?
What is your driver's license number or a state ID number? That's what it asks for.
Yeah.
And it says required field. And it says you must sign it. And it must match what it, and then there's like a little in gray box that must match signature on file with the DMV. Okay? Now, this is the deal. It is so hard path to believe that anybody, I mean, I'm on the roads, I drive, I see people of every race driving. How is this going to disenfranchise any other race or any other ethnic group over the fact that they need to have an ID? Yeah, I see a lot of people actually riding on the bus, too. I've noticed that. But I think that has more to do with gas prices than it does with the fact that they don't have any ID.
Right. Well, you know, because you have to have the ID to buy cigarettes, right?
Yeah, you have to
have ID to
file
for federal funds. Yes, exactly. So how is this disenfranchising anyone? Because actually in Indiana, if you don't have your ID, they give you a provisional ballot and you have time to produce just to show that that is who you are. You
the
know,
only
so
two times you don't need ID for anything, the only two times you don't need ID for anything is A, you're here illegally and you have either obtained a false ID or you just refuse to get one and you don't want to drive. You just, And if you refuse to get one, then you should refuse to vote. Because that's what you do by not having your ID. Everybody
right.
over the age of 18 has an ID that, I mean, I've never met anybody who doesn't have one.
Right. And it's not a hardship. Like here in Indiana, what they do is they provide them for free at the License Bureau. You can go in, you know, with your documentation, and they will give you a free state ID so that you don't have to pay for it. All you have to do is get a ride to the license branch. Now, instead of fighting this in court and spending all their money that way and spending all their money, you know, rising the people up to protest against us, why don't they have those people out there driving people to the license branch to get an ID? You know, because, and I know why they don't. They don't do it because they want to cheat.
You know, in Pennsylvania, they said they want to see the results of this election before instituting their law.
Which is crazy.
And the judge just now comes out and says, well, maybe it'll disenfranchise some people, so that's not right. We shouldn't disenfranchise anyone.
Yeah, but I don't see how I can legally rule that, especially if it's based on, like, the Indiana law. And I really don't know why any government wouldn't base it on that law since it already passed the Supreme Court. You know.
Yeah, but they don't. They aren't all the same. There's some that say, it's, you know, you got to bring your birth certificate, and to get a copy of your birth certificate, it costs money to get a copy of your birth certificate.
Well, again, don't you have one? I have mine.
I've had mine. Yeah, I know. I've had mine since I have my original, but I also have had copies made too.
Yeah.
Mainly because I'll tell you, in Wisconsin, when you're born in Wisconsin, your birth certificate says it is a felony to make a copy of this document. It really says that. And I had to go there and ask them to send me more copies of it and pay for those copies because I needed to file, you know, instead of letting them copy mine and then commit a felony by copying it, I needed extra copies to give out where needed, like for my marriage certificate and other stuff.
Right, right. So, but, you know, and I travel. We travel to Canada, so I now have a passport even on top of that. But what was interesting is that they now have these things called secure IDs in Indiana where you have to show like 5 forms of ID and then you can get a secure license which will allow you to fly, quote, I'm doing quotation marks in my fingers. And my daughter actually took in her passport card. Now, passport cards you have to send in to the federal government for them to verify who you are with a picture and then you get it back. And they wouldn't take that. She only had 4 IDs, and that was one of them. And that wasn't enough to get her a secure Indiana driver's license. And I just thought, what a
joke.
I'm like, what a joke. This is the federal government, and she can travel out of the country with this card and get back in, and you won't give her a secure Indiana driver's license. But that's just off the topic, but I just thought that was kind of ridiculous somehow government agencies actually function is not really in a good way, I should say. At this point, guys, I want to play a quick ad because here in Indiana, we have a really battle going on for the Senate race that Richard Murdoch actually beat Senator Lugar in the primaries. And we're having trouble getting some of the old school Republicans on board because they're mad because they lost. You know, here for years we've had to do with their candidate, but they don't want to do with our candidate. So I'm just going to play a quick, it's a 30-second ad that Murdoch's got out against. He's running against Joe Donnelly.
When it comes to the Washington way of bigger government and more wasteful spending, Joe Donnelly and Barack Obama are perfectly synchronized. The $700 billion Wall Street bailout? Yes. Raising the debt ceiling to spend trillions we don't have? You bet. The job-killing government takeover of healthcare? Perfect again. But we can't afford it. Donnelly and Obama. Perfect for each other, perfectly wrong for Indiana.
I'm Richard Murdoch, and I approve this message.
What's really cute about this is they have these old-timey synchronized divers jumping off the pool and into the diving pool. So it's kind of a cute little commercial. But just wanted to get that plug out there for Richard Murdoch. We're working really hard.
That takes me back a lot of years because it almost sounds like like the Vietnam War music in the background, you know?
Yeah, and the women are in these one-piece bathing suits, you know, like they used to wear. They had the little skirts, and, you know, they got the little hat things on their head, and it actually is.
The knee-high type cheerleading.
Yeah, and then they're diving into the pool one after the other. It's really kind of a cute commercial, so, but we really want to, we're trying to get him in, and we're working really hard to get the vote out here in Indiana. There's also programs going on for people out there. Patriot Soldiers is a former Santorum supporters who have a website called Patriot Soldiers. They have phone banks. They're calling into states like Iowa, Colorado, Ohio, Virginia, Michigan. And I know I'm missing a couple, but you can call in. And right now I know they're calling Iowa. I don't know how many of the banks are set up, but they're trying to get out the vote in all of these key states because we don't want to give up on anybody. Because the key to this winning this election is going to be getting out the vote. I personally feel there's going to be a huge turnout from independents and Republicans alike that are tired of the policies. But we can't just sit back and think that's going to happen. We need to actually work to make that happen. So they have phone banks going on. You can sign up for. They have Facebook pages you can sign up on. Very simple to make. They give you the numbers to call. They give you what to say. And they're getting a lot of good responses from that. And I actually heard today, Paul Ryan's mother made the 9 millionth call into Florida. So we've got some really good ground games going on in the states, and so I want everybody to keep their enthusiasm up, and just do what you can. If you don't like to talk, if you can tweet, Twitter's a great place to tweet things out. You know, just information pushing is a good way to help in this election. People going door to door in all the cities, just contact your local city or Patriot Voices actually can put you in contact, or MittRomney.com can put you in contact with offices in states near to you. I'm near Ohio. I may actually end up going door to door there in Ohio if I can be a help there. So there's multiple ways that we can help. Here in Indiana, we're definitely going to go Mitt Romney. We just have to work on getting Murdoch in along with him. So that's just a plug out there for everybody to keep working hard because, hey, I think we're winning this thing. And as this Benghazi thing implodes on them and their foreign policy, you know, we just need to be there to pick these pieces up and move on. Which brings me to another interesting thing. Did you see this Laura Logan? Billy, did you read that?
No. Do you have a link?
I actually do. And for those of you who don't know, Laura Logan is actually, she was a reporter. She was a war reporter. She spent a lot of time in the Middle East reporting on.
She was in Egypt. She was raped repeatedly with their hands.
Yes, absolutely. She was raped in Egypt. But before that, she was, you know, in Iraq, and she's been all over the Middle East. Well, she just did a 60-minute a special, and she was over there in Afghanistan, okay, talking to the military leaders on the ground. Well, apparently she was in Chicago to give a speech to, there were 1,100 influential government, politics, media, legal, and corporate people there, okay, and she gave a message. She said, she had a September 30th report, The Longest War, which examined the Afghan conflict and exposed the perils that still confront America 11 years after 9/11. But I give this woman kudos because she said, 11 years later, they still hate us now more than ever. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda have not been vanquished. They're coming back. She goes, I chose this subject because, one, I can't stand that there is a major lie being propagated. She's from South Africa, so she has a lover accent. Anyway, the lie
is. Yeah, it reminds me of Charlize Theron.
Yeah, and it's so strong to come back from what she endured. But anyway, the lie is that Americans' military might has tamed the Taliban. There is this narrative coming out of Washington for the last 2 years. It is driven in part by Taliban apologists who claim they are just poor, moderate, gentler, kinder Taliban. It's nonsense. And they're just saying she stepped out way out of her role of objective journalism, but, you know, and the audience was riveted. But she interviewed John Allen, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, Afghan President Hamid Karzai, and a Taliban commander trained by Al-Qaeda. She says the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are teaming up and recruiting new terrorists to do us deadly harm. She said our government is downplaying the strength of our enemies in Afghanistan and Pakistan as a rationale of getting us out of the longest war. And we have been lulled into believing that the perils are in the past. You are not listening to what the people who are fighting you say about this fight. In your arrogance, you think you write the script. She said our enemies are writing the story and there's no happy ending for us. She says as a journalist, she was queasy. And reporters should tell the story, not be the story. And as an American, she was frightened. And she also called for retributions on those who killed Stephen, saying that we need to exact revenge and let the world know that we're not going to tolerate this.
And, you know, this really bothers me because, you know, it takes me back to my husband who's leaving for Afghanistan in December.
Yeah.
And he told me that when he was in Iraq in 2007, he said that he worked with, you know, Afghans and Iraqi soldiers and stuff. And one of the guys who spoke pretty good English literally sat down next to him and goes, you know, I'm supposed to kill you, right? And he said, what? You know, he, like, jumped back, like, ready to pick up his gun. And he says, well, according to Allah, I'm supposed to kill you, but I have to wait for my imam to tell me to.
Oh, my.
And that's the problem over there. That's mm-hmm. what everybody over there is doing. They're just waiting for that command. And when they get it, our soldiers are dying.
Oh, yeah. And they're dying now. And the news refuses to cover it. Because our policy is to appease.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. It's like, as soon as one of them, they get their commands separately. They don't get them as a group. Each person gets their own command. And they'll tell them, okay, you have to kill at least one man today or whatever. From their imam or from whoever, I think the other person that can give them commands is their sheikh. If mm-hmm. they get a command, they have to kill one person, or they have to kill four people, or whatever their command is, they do it.
Right. And that's pretty scary, especially with your husband having to go over there. And there have been letters written home from soldiers saying that, you know, they got us doing these meaningless things that are costing lives and limbs because they got them out. They're not getting enough sleep and enough rest, but they have to go out on these patrols every so many hours and they don't have the staff to do it. And it's a meaningless patrol. They just walk around and it's pretty sad. And yet, where's the media coverage on this? Where do we see this? We have lost more military men and women under Barack Obama than we did in the entire wars with President Bush. Where's the outrage? Why do we not hear this? You know, it's like
no one's outraged. Like, they think they believe Obama. I can't tell you enough. They are indoctrinated. They are absolutely oblivious to the truth, and they will refuse to open their eyes because they hold him to a higher standard than everyone else. Barack Obama knows what he's talking about. Nobody else does. He is, everything he says is what they hang on. If he says Mitt Romney is lying, that is their motto. If he says Chicago is a racist term, if he doesn't say that it's not, they go with it, you know, because they go with what his media that promotes him says.
Right, which is sad because it's our mainstream media that's doing this. And as, is it Pat Caddell? Called them out for it because, you know, this is what's supposed to keep America free is the freedom of the press to report the facts to the American people. And we're not getting those facts. And then
objectively, they're supposed to give us the facts. We're supposed to translate them.
Right. Exactly.
Yes,
they should be telling you.
I guarantee there are too many translating them for us saying, this is what this means.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Not their job.
And it isn't their job. What they need to say is these attacks occurred. This is what the administration said. This is what we're hearing from the intelligence community. Figure it out for yourself. You know, but instead they're going, oh, Mitt Romney he shouldn't have said that. It's like, he didn't say anything wrong. He condemned the attacks and refused to apologize for America. That's who we are in America. You know, and yet they spent days and days going after Mitt Romney while there are 50 riots. I mean, how many people heard about the 50 riots in, you know, 50 different countries against our embassies? And all the while, Obama and them are perpetuating these by, you know, blaming it on a video that only like 300 or 400 people had seen. And then it jumped to 2 million after they brought it to light. Who told them about this video in the first place? That's a question that needs to be answered.
Barack Obama.
Well, where did he find it? Because it was a really obscure video.
I know. And you know what? I'll tell you, when I first viewed it, it had like 400 hits.
Yeah.
That's
and
it.
When I saw it, there were over 2 million. And so they actually perpetuated the problem by trying to make this video, and then they instead of just having this contained, we had riots all across the world, burnings of our flags, attacks going on our embassies around the world. They do not understand appeasement. If they see that you're weak, they are going to come after you. And this is something that Ronald Reagan understood. This is something that Mitt Romney understands. You get peace through strength. We have a totally destabilized region. We have Syria's out of control. We don't know who's arming the rebels. We've got Russia in there. You've got Iran in there. You don't know who's going to come out on top of that. And there are, unfortunately, chemical weapons in Iran. You know, so this is a very scary situation. Whereas if we had made some decisive decisions to arm the people of Syria without, you know, then they wouldn't have turned to the terrorists, because this, and one of the citizens actually said this, we had to go where we could to get arms for ourselves because we were being slaughtered. And now they're trying to draw Turkey in. Well, NATO has said that they will back Turkey. Well, who's NATO? NATO is basically funded by the United States. And it will be our military, our money, and our people actually implementing any NATO plan. So we're going to get drawn into this one way or another. And again, in Libya, why were they not listening to the men on the ground who were telling them that, you know, we need more people, we don't feel secure here, and then we're told, no, we don't have those people. We got a caller here at 919. Let me see who that is. Hi, who's calling from 919?
It's Barbara.
Well, hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
All right.
What you got to say?
This topic gets me so outraged.
Good word.
I know,
that's
I'm preaching
word,
to the
yeah.
choir. It's kind of an understatement, but I want to kind of keep my cool. If somebody's beating the crap out of you, what do? Do you stand there and take it? Do you run home and cry to mommy, or do you stand up and hit back? We're at the point of, we've already, you know, said, oh, please don't do that, and went home and told mommy. Now they're, they're blasting the crap out of us over there in other countries, and we're sitting there saying, oh, please don't do that. No, we've got to stop that.
Right.
We've got to start punching back.
Right.
And I don't know what these. You know, I posed that question to somebody on my Facebook page, and this guy, I had to defriend him because he was just starting to really assassinate my character.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was still my neighbor, I probably would have went over there and punched him upside the head and see what he would have done.
Yeah.
You know? What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, they just...
There?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I ramble.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Barb, you don't ramble?
I don't say.
No, you don't ramble. You have some substantive things to say.
Oh, thank you. I usually think I just call and ramble. No,
nah.
Really, I don't understand what, even today, you know, with the kids not keeping score of their games. You've got to learn how to compete.
Right.
So you can want to do better.
Right.
I don't get.
You can't just reward them for everything, because then they're not going to learn how to function in life. Because life,
right,
and we all know it, isn't all a rosy picture. You know, there are ups and downs, and you don't always get the job, or you might get fired from the job, and you've got to learn how to take that. And if we're not teaching them at a young age that there are winners and losers, you know, when are they going to learn this?
Exactly.
Yes, you're right, but you know what I'm going to tell you? It's that bully mentality they've got out there. You know, I'll tell you, Barack Obama took the bully pulpit all the way to another level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He is bullying America. That was supposed to bully other countries and basically let them know our strength.
Right.
He is bullying American citizens.
Absolutely.
And it is ridiculous. He's trying to say, and I agree with what you're saying about kids. When it comes to a bully, you know, my husband, what he did was he literally, his youngest son was in shop class, and he was getting bullied by these guys every single day, and they were just making fun of him. He had like naturally curly hair, and they'd like call him curly locks and junk like that. He didn't like it. And my husband said, well, if you can't take it, then you know what? Next time you see them, pick up a hammer and smash one of their brains in. That's how he said it. But, you know what? He said, and he didn't really mean it, but he was trying to get his son to stop feeling, like, so weak. Like, he needed to gain a little strength. Well, his son said the next day, he went to shop class, and as soon as they started picking on him, he just picked up a hammer. He looked at them with this really deep look in his eyes, and they backed off.
Good.
Oh, yeah. That's all it took. He said he didn't even have to pick up the hammer altogether. He just put his hand on it.
Right. And it used to be when America would speak, they would listen, you know, because we were the mightiest. Unfortunately, our current president is trying to do all that he can to change that, because he doesn't ideologically agree with that. And
he doesn't want America to be exceptional. He wants the world to be exceptional, he says. And that's, you know, that's a bad way to look at it, because right now, I'm telling you, we have too many enemies out there not to be exceptional. We have, you know, I'll tell you the best, my husband will say straight out, our military is not the best out there. Russia has a better military, and Israel has a much better military. But Russia's military is just more disciplined in their obedience to the command. They are not better trained on the guns. They are not better trained in the field. But they are much more obedient to their commands. And that's something that we have in America, that we have a president basically saying, in the White House, you don't have to follow command. You basically need to just do whatever you want, just whatever feels good. Basically, you know, he's got that kind of mentality going on.
Well, and he apologizes for our military men.
Right.
You know, when they burned that Koran, it should have been, well, you know, we're sorry your Koran was burned, but they didn't know the difference, and we will not tolerate any repercussions from you or your people. You know, that's what needed to be said, and that's not what he did at all. It's not what he did at all. And that projects weakness. And you cannot project weakness to a people that live by the sword. You know, you just can't do it. It's not going to work.
And who do we have? Bing? Is that Bing? 931, is that Bing?
Who do we have at 931? Anybody? 931? I guess they're there. We'll see if they'll say hello or not. I know we are. I do need to play. I know a couple weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago or so, I did a segment on Atlas Shrugged, which is a book written by Ayn Rand.
Oh my God! I saw that movie last night. It was awesome.
Did you see it? Okay, because
says, and it's being played
part one
again.
Or part two.
One.
Okay, because part two is coming out this Friday.
Right, that's why they're playing it.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw I saw part one last year.
I actually read the book just, you know, a month or so ago, and I was just so, my mind was just, you know, wow, you know.
Years ago.
Wow. So there were so many good points in that book. But anyway, I'm going to play the trailer for this. And just so we can give some advertisement out there, it is coming out Friday in your movie theaters, and this is part two.
To protect the security of our fellow citizens, for the duration of the national emergency, that the statutes of Directive 10289 shall remain in effect. Copyrights shall be transferred to the federal government. All wages and other forms of income are hereby frozen.
It's all happening so fast.
I won't be a slave.
You say you and Henry Reardon found it?
A device harvesting limitless energy without fossil fuel.
We're so close to having something they won't be able to fight.
They will try like hell to stop you.
Ms. Taggart,
I think everyone agrees that capitalism doesn't work.
You don't understand the power they have.
The government takes what they want and taxes what they leave behind.
One of these days you're going to have to decide which side you're on.
It's obvious that drastic measures have to be taken.
Saw Atlas, knees buckling, arms trembling, but still trying to hold up the world with the last of his strength. What would you tell him to do?
Where are they? Anyone who could make a difference.
I'm sitting next to him.
I've only got one thing left worth fighting for. This.
If you feel you have the right to use force against me, bring guns.
Time is running out.
Who or what is John Gall? Is he even a man?
Or an idea?
Are you ready?
Oh, that's exciting. I really love that book. Now I think we might have Bing. Bing, do we have you at 931?
Yeah. You hear me?
Hi. Jump on in there.
Oh, you were having a wardrobe malfunction. Hi, Uncle Bing. Yeah, I've got a mic that keeps slipping off of me or something. But no, great show. And I just wanted to tune in and just say I got talked to from our last episode last week on Soldiers, Patriots, Citizens, and we talked to Harmon Caslow. And it was a great show, man. And a lot of insight there, a lot of wild stuff. But I've got a T-shirt to give out to anybody, and Brenda or Billy, it's up to your call as far as who gets it. I'm looking at value to value here, you know, so if somebody wants to sit there and say, okay, we're going to share this show, maybe the first person up there to share it gets a T-shirt. They're sending me out a care package, so.
Okay.
Are we
going to go ahead and start that tonight? As far as
I've got 25 T-shirts, girl, to give out in the next 3 or 4 days. And look, you just played the trailer, and the thing is, we've got to get people into this theater this weekend.
Absolutely. Even if you can't get to the theater, get this book and read it, because the profound insight that this woman had, because she did come from Russia. And during the Russian takeover of the businesses, and the insight that it gives into that kind of government, and the rebellion that goes place in this book is just awesome. So,
to them, it's to us. If this is playing out now,
right?
Nowadays, it's playing out in this country now.
Absolutely,
and it really is.
I saw so much last night when I watched it. I was so excited that it was on. And I did. I saw a lot of it that's happening right now. And I was so proud of her that she didn't that she stood up to the head Yin-Yang guy, basically saying, screw you, pal.
Right. Right. And yep. It gets more exciting as it goes on. So
I know.
I mean, it's just really, it's just, you know, and like you said, the parallels to what's going on today. And you can't miss it if you read this book. And again,
especially the capitalism threat, you know?
Right.
The way that, I mean, Occupy, let's just go there. You've got so many people protesting capitalism these days. It's insane, to say the least.
And that goes back because those are the kids that weren't taught how to be competitive. They were everything was handed to them. That's
the
era.
They're the ones who always won. They're the ones who, if their team lost, they got a trophy. That's
right.
I mean, that's what we have right now. I can't remember. There are no losers type mentality. There are losers. Okay, get it through your head, people out there. You lose if you don't try hard enough. And if you do lose, if you want to win again, or if you want to try again, go for it and try to win again. But you got to keep trying. The lesson is that you don't give up if you really want something. And if you want a good job, there's tons of jobs out there. Really, there are. And you can find one, but you got to try to find one. You can't sit here and say to your government, give me one, or give.
Oh,
I'll never forget the guy I heard on Sean Hannity when he was trying to say $80,000 a year and this and that, and this is what you got to give me. No, you start at the bottom, and you earn what you want. I had no problem proving myself and showing that I was willing to advance and take on new responsibilities. That's what it takes. You have to prove yourself. And if you can't prove yourself, I mean, I'll tell you right now, just to a little secret to those in Occupy, people are looking at videos of faces, and if they see you out there, they're not going to hire you.
Right.
That's true.
Well, the thing is that the whole premise behind Ayn Rand's book, actually, is that, you know, capitalism and the American way of life are tied at the hip. Capitalism and constitutional, that we are tied at the hip. And if you're against capitalism, then I'm sorry, you're an enemy of mine because you're against the Constitution. And I'm telling you, me and Michael are on a big tear, man, and I don't know if you know it, but we're on a big tear to get this movie out there this weekend. It's premiering on Friday, okay, 10/12/12. It's premiering this Friday. What better time, man? After the debate last week where Obama just got totally crunched and before the elections, I mean, we have to get people out to see this because it's that influential. And, you know, after talking with the producers, and I was on with producers today and with assistant producers and so on with, on the phone, I've got a goodie bag coming in, and it's you know, it's hot. So I want to, you know, give away some stuff, and I also want to get people to get out there Friday this weekend if you can. If you can, if you can bring somebody out there and say, look, you know, you're my friend. I want to, you know, somebody on the other side, you know, preferably, or somebody independent. Get them out to the movie. You know, talk about it. Have coffee after or whatever, take lunch or whatever, dinner. And talk about the movie, because it's that influential. If this is the second most influential book behind the Bible, can you believe that?
Really?
And they're
interesting.
Yes, it is. And also when they started out with part one, they had six movies, six screens they played, and they ended up with the help of radio show hosts and that kind of thing, they ended up with about 350 or something. They got 900 screens playing now. There is no reason that people can't get out there and see this movie this weekend, because it means a lot to the producers. They put in their own money on a lot of this. On the first movie, they put in, on the first part, they put in a lot of their movie. On this movie is actually, if you think about it, it's a low budget movie. I think this movie here is 20-25 million, something like that. A low budget movie, but the stars are excellent. I mean, you know, and it could not come at a better time. And I'm telling you, just take a friend out, pay the extra $6-$7 or something like that, skip lunch, whatever, you know, and get a friend out to see this movie, because it's that important. I don't know what movies cost wherever you all are, but, you know, where I'm at, they're pretty cheap, you know. But
yeah, I think they're $10 here.
They're like,
well,
they're $5.50
for a matinee.
It's $9. It's $9 unless you buy more than five tickets.
All right.
Okay, so I am actually going to offer to the first person to call in. We're going to, are we giving a T-shirt? Is that what we're doing, Bing?
Hey, I was the first person to call in.
I don't know if we count.
I got quite a bit. I got some other bling too, but I'm very fortunate. Me and Michael are very fortunate to have hooked up with these people here, and they like us, and they've listened to us, and they definitely are willing to help. So I mean, however you want to do it, Billy. I mean, Billy and Brenda, the way I was looking at it was like, you know, maybe have somebody share your show.
You two are the first person.
Hey guys, I just thought of something I can do.
I don't.
How many shirts do you have, Bing?
I'm gonna go up to the movie theaters and I'm gonna be passing these out and I'm gonna say, look, you know, if what movie are you watching? If somebody's watching a different movie, I'm gonna say, look, I'm gonna give you a free shirt if you watch Atlas Shrugged. So, I mean, that's my take on that. And then I've got some other ones that we're gonna be promoting on the other CNR radio.
What other
kind
of bling do you have though?
I don't know until it comes in. I've got a lot of pamphlets. I've got some flyers. I've got some posters coming in, that kind of thing. So
okay. I'm just thinking about, because I am right now chatting with Larry O'Connor. You know who Larry O'Connor is?
No, I don't, hon.
Oh,
he
yeah,
is the executive producer for Breitbart TV.
Okay.
On Breitbart.com.
Awesome.
And I talk to him all the time. He's a really cool guy. In fact, he's got a show going on tonight again. But he goes over live air in Philly. He also has a radio show. It's Larry O'Connor Stage Right, if you ever want to check it out. Or Stage Right Larry O'Connor, one of the two. I think it's Stage Right Larry O'Connor. He's an awesome guy. And I know he could definitely get rid of some of that stuff if he wanted him to.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'm going to have a problem getting rid of it. I'm not thinking about getting rid of it. I mean, this means a lot to me. I'm a faithful Ayn Rand follower. I just, you know, I just believe in her message. I believe that this message is appropriate for this time of day. This time in our period of time here, and we just need to get it out. And the producers just want us to get the theaters filled the first weekend, this coming weekend. If we can get them filled, then that's all they want. So that's me and Michael's mission, and I can speak for Michael on that. And however you want to do it. I mean, I just look at value to value, because Ayn Rand's a capitalist and I'm a capitalist. And the thing is, you know, if somebody wants a T-shirt, you know, just say, look, you know, go, you know, tweet about our show. Share it on Facebook. Tweet about your show. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then offer it that way. The first person that tweets, you know, that shares, you've got a share link right up here at the top. First person that does that gets that T-shirt. I don't care how you want to do it.
All right, guys, there you go. There's your challenge.
Yeah.
I don't know how we're going to judge who tweets that, but tweet it out.
Well, the first person that tweets it, it should come back to the show link. So,
and then actually, I think we should definitely give Barbara one for tonight already, though.
Yeah, she's called it.
Yeah, I can do
that. Well, then, I'm thinking they come in extra large. I don't know yet. I have not got them, but I know they're either going to be they're probably going to be extra large. So I'm sorry about that. You know,
give out
like
their addresses then, right?
No, I'm
not
saying
can,
I'm weird
not on
about
the air.
It. Just,
we can take them into hold and get their address. So that's
issue. I'm just going to need their name, address, and that way I can send them out to them. And then email me at bing@traditionalamericanmovement.com. And give me that info, and I'll get the shirt out to him as soon as I get him. And
okay.
I also
okay.
probably
can
plug
you
in
on
a
that.
Couple flyers and postcards or whatever.
Can you go ahead. What'd you say, Barbara?
What was that website thing? Because I've tried to get on it, and it keeps taking me around in circle on your website.
We don't like spammers and libtards. So what we do is we have a little picture captcha, what's called, at the bottom there. You have to scroll down the screen on the registration screen and answer two little quick pictures. You know, they just show you a picture of what reminds you of this picture. You just click on those pictures and then, boom, you register. So that
okay.
normally is the problem that we have with some new people registering. But
okay.
yeah, I'll go ahead and give you my email address, and that way you can get that out. I think you guys should have it, but I'll type that in here now. And go ahead and see who won. And yeah, we'll go ahead and give away too, Brenda.
Okay. All right. So is anybody out there? If we're going to go ahead and give one to Barbara because she's already called in here and joined us tonight. But if you send out a Twitter. You can actually just click at the bottom of the chat screen and send out a Twitter feed that we're on the air, and we've got some free stuff, advertising for Atlas Shrugged, which is coming out this Friday, and we were trying to get people out to that. So awesome, awesome story. Talks about individualism versus collectivism. And that's what we're seeing a lot of in this election, as you see that you will see a certain group of people will actually say the same exact stuff. Watch the media and watch what they do. They will use exactly the same words because this is what they're told to do. And they think in groups. They don't think as an individual. And this, you know, a lot of times you'll see this in the Democratic Party or the liberal part of the Democratic Party, where it's all, we all have to think alike. You know, Billy and I experienced this when a member actually, a guy called in and couldn't understand why we didn't support Sandra Fluke because she's a woman, you know, and we had to try to explain to him that because we have our own ideas. And I must say that Sandra Fluke today, okay, I must say this, there was this actress, and the name's escaping me now, who came out and said she was for Romney. She's a black woman. And she got so much hate on Twitter. And Sandra Fluke did come to her defense and says that we shouldn't be doing this. She has a right to her opinion. So,
wow.
Yeah. That I have to give her credit for doing that. But she got a lot of hate. Getting a lot of hate twits and stuff because she did come out and say she was voting for Obama, or not Obama, Romney, because he was
Romney.
What the country needed. Yes.
What's
so,
her name, like Dets or Deets or something like that? I just heard about her, and I can't find anything. It's like there's a media blackout on that. There's also, you know, it's surprising there's a media blackout on the bombing over there in Cairo. For the people that were killed, you know, and I'm sitting there wondering, okay, what is it? Some kind of stealth deal? I mean, if I was a parent of a soldier out there, they got killed in that bombing in Cairo, I'd be all over the news. I heard one woman talk about it, and then she was like, "You didn't hear nothing about it."
You don't hear anything. So people, when I talk about it, they tell me I'm lying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because oh, yeah. And
they tell me to stop watching Fox News.
Yes, exactly. And I had to actually reply to that. It's like, well, I knew on September 12th that it was a terrorist attack, and it took your news station 10 days to get to that same finding. So why are you laughing at me? You know?
They needed permission from Obama to say so.
Oh,
they didn't get their permission from Obama to say such a thing.
Well, crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so much what went on in this Atlas Shrugged, is where they were only getting, people were told to think a certain way. You know, you think like this, you do this, it's all for the common good. It's all for the common good. Anybody who's out here trying to make money, they're bad people because they're not for the common good. And this is going on in our country today. And, you know, it is very scary and it's very...
And see, the thing that a lot of people don't understand is, okay, like my mother in particular, I don't know why I keep using her as an example, but she is now going, switching to the dark side. She used to be a conservative, now she's on Obama, you know, she's like big time, and I was always the only one on her side with her, you know, we used to always argue everyone else, and now, you know, I moved to Iowa, and she is stuck with all the liberals up there in Wisconsin,
oh, no.
So they kind of like gang up on her, well, now it's worked, and right now the one thing with her especially is, she always likes to tell me things about how, you know, important a person Obama is compared to me. Like, I'm a nobody, and he went to Harvard. He did this. He did that. He knows what he's talking about. You don't know what you're talking about. I say, well, you know what? Just like Obama, and unlike you, Mom, I read Rules for Radicals. I read Mein Kampf. I read The Naked Communist. I have, you know, I've read Atlas Shrugged. And I am well aware of what's going on. Unlike my mother, who does, she chooses not to read anything. She really doesn't. She just goes by word of mouth. And I tell her, well, that's your biggest problem. You are not being allowed to think for yourself anymore. And I just recently was called a communist. Simply because I read those things. If I read those things, that makes me a communist. And I'm like, how is that so, Mom? All I'm trying to do is figure out what the enemy's up to. You know, what I need to protect myself from.
Right.
And that doesn't make me a communist.
No.
It makes me aware of what's happening right now. Because in there, that's what they said will happen. And you're not getting it. And she just, you know, she will not take that. You know, anyone who would dare read or pick up any of those books is, you know, someone who supports communism. And I'm like, okay, well, guess what? I'll tell you straight out. Obama read them all.
Oh, yeah.
He read them all, too.
Studied them.
Oh, well, how do you know that? You want to know how I know that? Because I read his books. There's another way. She won't even read his own books. Because,
well, who called you a communist?
My mother.
Her mother.
Oh.
Yeah, I got called a Nazi today. It's like, yeah, I'm a Nazi. I think you got the wrong party.
Communist.
Really?
Well, I got German ancestry, so that's pretty occasional for me.
So do
I.
Okay, guys, real quick here. This actress's
I was actually accused of being an illegal immigrant the other day, too. Someone said that I am from Canada, and how long have I been in the country illegally? I'm like, what? I'm from Wisconsin. I was born and bred in Wisconsin.
That's crazy. The actress's name was Stacey Dash. Okay, and here's some neat things. I'm just picking this up. She was going to be on Piers Morgan tonight to talk about this racial backlash. They were calling her nigger. They were calling her Aunt Jemima.
Yes.
And all kinds of things on it. And so she actually, the vice president.
She's not black enough.
She's not black enough. But Paul Ryan, apparently, she had a great conversation with her, and he thanked her for her support. So this could be, you know, this is. I think we're at a turning point. I think because I'm seeing more and more of this, where we're out here tweeting this stuff, and the media is picking it up. So. And not soon enough, because if you look at all the desecration that's going on the Romney signs and the hate and the...
Oh, guess what? I don't know if you guys...
Did you see the tweets?
The what?
Yeah.
Did you read tweets about Romney killing Romney?
Go to Twitchy.com. You'll find them.
Oh, yeah. I've been following them pretty quickly, you know, and it's just... And this is the party of tolerance. You know, and of inclusion, and yet they can't tolerate anything that doesn't fall in with what they think should be the issue.
Yeah,
and,
what their opinion is has to be followed to the T. Or
right.
else.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're racist. Otherwise, you get name called. Otherwise, you know, you're the stupid idiot.
Right.
But,
well,
liberal
tolerance only extends to what they believe is, you know, what they believe in.
No.
When you disagree
liberal
with them, they don't have no tolerance for you.
No. Liberal tolerance only applies to quote unquote liberals. They can tolerate
that's what I'm saying.
Liberals. They don't tolerate anybody who's not a liberal. And they will make it known that you're not a liberal if they ever find out. And it's the most, if you want to talk about racism, I mean, I talked about this on my last show. My sister and my mom came from Wisconsin to go to grandparents' day with my children. And my children go to a Catholic school. And they had a program. My sister looks up at the stage and she goes, "Oh my gosh, this is so racist. Look at how few dark faces you see up there." And there's like 7 in a pool of 50, okay? And I'm talking dark, dark faces. There were also Hispanics. There were also people from India. And there were blacks. And my sister was like all up about this. And I go, "You know, I don't know what you just did, Bobby." That's my sister's name. Sorry. I said, "You just created a victim right there. You made each one of those kids up there who's dark a victim. And you're the one who is being racist. Because you know what I see? I see a grade school class full of wonderful, loving children. I don't see color or race or anything else." And she said, "That's your problem." I'm like, "No, it's your problem because you can't see past those things."
Well,
no, they can't. They feel guilty. And you look at an NBA game, you tell me which side is racist there. You tell me which side is racist. You know, I mean, look at an NFL game. Look at any kind. They, you know, look, the thing is that these people want to sit there and feel guilty and mire in their own sponge-like Bob, you know, they're down in a hole, man, and they're just in a sponge, and they just, that's why liberal TV, and I'm sorry, I'm getting like ADD here, but that's why liberal TV, liberal radio don't work, because people that want to listen to people sitting there bitching and moaning all day long, they don't want to listen to it. They want to listen to give us some, you know, okay, you can talk about things that are going on, but at least give us some kind of answers. You know, and that's why these people are failing, and they don't get it. And you look at an NBA game, and there was another guy, and I can't remember his name, too, that was talking about. And this guy is sitting there. He's been fired from I don't know how many jobs. I think he's on MSNBC or something like that, and some black guy or whatever. And he's talking about, well, you know, if it weren't for affirmative action, then everybody in politics would be white. Well, wait a minute. You know, look at an NBA game, is like I said earlier. You know, there's more because the people that promote these games so want the best talent. And the best talent is in NBA, obviously, is, you know, blacks. And I agree with that. I mean, there's some whites that play good talent, too. There's some, you know. But, I mean, you go into any kind of work ethic or any kind of environment like that, and you've got people that want the best people for the job. And that is what we've got away from that. We've got affirmative action to just sit there and say, well, no, we're going to promote you because of your race or whatever. You know, and you've got illegal immigrants in this country that are promoted for being illegal.
Right,
yeah.
Which is so wrong.
But that's part of their affirmative action, because you have to have at least one in a position of some sort.
Which actually, guys, there is a case at the Supreme Court level now where a white young woman was denied admission to Texas, one of the Texas universities, because of the quota. And so it's to the Supreme Court. So we may see an overturning of the ruling for the colleges that you have to accept them if they're black, even if there's a more qualified candidate. So that's at the Supreme Court right now. So we can hope and pray that actually gets that turned over, because that's actually giving them an unfair advantage and making them feel like they're special and they're privileged when they're not. You know, you should be rewarded for your hard work. And at a time
right.
when we have a black president, you can no longer tell me that we are a racist country. And the only ones
right.
you will see playing the race card is the Democratic Party. And another thing you got to look at, only 14% of our population is black. So for every 100 people, there's probably 14 black people. So when your
mm-hmm.
sister, when Billy's sister looks at a stage and sees only, you know, 9 black faces, you know, you got to look at the proportionate to what is actually in, you know, the country.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bing was saying, you know, I'm not seeing that 96% or the 86% white people on these NFL teams and these basketball teams, but I'm not
mm-hmm.
calling them racist. I'm not calling that racist, even though if you look at the number in the population and of whites versus blacks, there should be, you know, more whites on that team if you want to make it fair. And we
mm-hmm.
don't want that. We don't want to see in colors. You know,
right.
it's not about colors. It's about being American.
Yeah,
and, you
absolutely.
Know, and sharing values. And that's, you know, that's where we actually need to be. And unfortunately, with this affirmative action and different things, I think they take us back in time. And Obama has actually taken us back years in our race relations, unfortunately, with his Trayvon Martin interference, with his interference with the Cambridge police, with his, you know, well, the videos that have come to light from 2007, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for our country. So
I think Martin Luther King Jr. is rolling over in his grave knowing what this guy's doing to his country that he built. Well, not that he built, but...
Well, what he fought for.
You know, what he's... Yeah, everything that he fought for is just getting thrown away.
Yeah, and
well,
it's going to take us years to repair.
Yeah, the Democratic Party has been just literally the rug was swept off from under their feet, under their feet,
mm-hmm.
and they don't understand that their party, their own party that they look up to, the old JFK and so on party, it's not there no more. It's not there.
Right.
It's been taken over by liberals and by what they call progressives. I call them liberals. I don't call them progressives. Call them for what they are. I mean, for
right.
God's sake, so take a stand and call them for what they are. They're liberals. And a liberal to me is not my friend. They
right.
are not my friend. And I cannot sit there and try to, you know, reach across the aisle to a liberal. Because when you reach across the aisle to a liberal, your hand will come back bloodied, mangled, and your watch will probably be stolen and you wouldn't. You know, that's just the way it is.
Well, that actually happened. I mean, that happened with this 2008 crisis, mortgage crisis, that they tried to blame on Bush and the Republicans.
Oh,
and it was actually, you know, it goes back, actually, back into the 70s, but Clinton's administration did a whole lot to make them loan that money to the minorities who couldn't afford it. But
right.
see, it was racist if you didn't loan that money to those people who couldn't afford it. And the banks were threatened with lawsuits.
Yeah.
And then Freddie and Fannie brought these up. And Bush was calling for regulations. They had reports that this was going to crash. And he called, you know, so many times for Congress to do something, and this is when the Democrats, because the Democrats actually took control in 2007, and prior to that, in 2005, there was a bill that McCain was a co-sponsor on, along with Elizabeth Dole, that would have reined in Freddie and Fannie, but they couldn't get it out of committee because the lobbying efforts that went on to convince the Republicans that it wasn't needed. And yet, what happened when it crashed? Oh, this is all Bush's fault. It's all
mm-hmm.
Bush's fault. You know, and this is a basic misunderstanding, and they do it today. You know, what we got right now is more than just Obama. There is a whole
mm-hmm.
corrupt machine in Washington because it isn't just the president. And he's taken more liberties than any president that I've known. And the president is not given that kind of power in the Constitution. You know, he
right.
is supposed to deal with the foreign entities and, you know, basically – oversee that portion of our government, and the Congress is supposed to make the laws and the bills, and they're not, it's supposed to be about our defense and our immigration and things that need to be handled on the national level, not all this nitpicky little this and that, and let's get our noses involved in this, and let's get involved in business, and let's do this. You know, we're so out of control in Washington. But this is a plot. This is an agenda. It's a group. Harry Reid mm-hmm. is part of that group. As Alan West would say, they're communist. And they are. They're there. You know, just look at the communist agenda and look at who supports what in Congress, and I think you have your answer. You know, you don't have to give specific names. Just look at what they believe in and look at that list. It's a list published in the 1963 Congressional Record. It's also in the Naked Communist, came out from behind the Iron Curtain in 1958. And if you look at that list and you apply it to people in Washington, you're going to see who it is. But we've also got people like George Soros. We've got money behind this that's pushing the media and pushing this story. So there's a whole corrupt section of our country that is trying to push us down that hole to self-destruct. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we're taking it on Obama, but we've also got to work on getting the old schoolers out of Congress. We need to get new people in there. We need to break this circle of money and corruption that's going on in Washington so that we, the people, can actually once again have a say in what's going on in our country. So it's, when you think of it in that terms, though, it kind of gets overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So we like to try to focus on, well, let's get Obama out of there first. let's work on, you know, getting this country on track. And I think financially, I think Mitt Romney, from what I've learned and seen, I think if we get him in the White House that we can get rid of this wasteful spending. Oh, my God, this Big Bird thing. Come on, guys. Big Bird, really?
Well, Obama's that's all they got.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, NPR and PBS are doing fine without subsidies, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
The subsidy was to get them started. They're started. Believe me, they're started.
Yeah.
Big Bird is the richest bird alive.
Yeah, and it's 14 million. So then I got people saying, well, it's only 0.14% of the budget. I said, multiply that by 10,000 items that are just 0.14%, and it makes a huge difference. See, people are just so irrational. It's like some guy tried to tell me it was vital that we support this public radio or public station because that was the only station people in the country could get, you know, like in the rural areas. And I said, what, they don't get ABC, NBC, and CBS there? And they don't have radio? You know, come on, people. Use your brains. You know, this is a no-brainer. You know, you get in there and you cut all the no-brainers out, and then you go after the bigger stuff because that's going to take a little longer. And it's going to take a lot of negotiation in Congress, you know. But how can you not agree to cut spending for a corporation that they're paying their CEO $900,000 a year?
Exactly.
You know, this is common sense. And Big Bird asked that Obama not use him in his ads anymore.
Yeah.
I saw that.
I actually saw that.
It's like, boom, first we got the AARP saying, don't use us, don't talk about us, we don't want to be associated with you. We got Big Bird saying, no, don't use us in your ads, you don't have that right. And we have one other group. Oh, the guy that he's quoting saying Romney's plan is a $5 trillion whatever. He said, you're misquoting me, quit doing it. That's not what I said. And so, unfortunately, the mainstream media won't report it, so we're going to get called liars. But I just kind of find it kind of funny that these people are saying, oh, no, don't be quoting me.
It's kind of funny that, you know, Mitt Romney at least didn't say anything about the Teletubbies or, you know. what's that blue guy, Barney? God, I hated it.
Well, the thing he wants to get rid of Big Bird. He wants to get rid of NPR.
Right.
NPR is a part of PBS.
Yeah, it's funded by the taxpayers. The thing is that these look, I grew up, I'm probably older than you guys, and I grew up, I didn't have the Teachers Foundation and all this kind of stuff that we had in school. My kids were not brought up with Big Bird, okay? They were not. Because for one thing, he creeps me out. And so does the stupid guy in the trash can. What was his name? Groucho? He's all mad, you know, Cookie Monster stealing everybody's cookies. You know,
Cookie
look,
Monster, silly.
Well, whatever. I mean, the whole show creeped me out. It was like, God, you know, what's going on here? Oh, let's get, you know, Mr. Rogers, you know, I grew up with him, and it's like, man, this guy, would he even creeped me out. But
yeah, he was a nerd.
Yeah. You know, but I'm thinking, okay, Big Bird, I mean, my kids, look, if you're a parent and you got to sit there and your whole focus in life for your children, raising your children, is making sure that they know what the letter A is for today, you know, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, the parents need to be
well,
teaching.
You know, yeah. What Ronnie said was he wants to get rid of everything we have to borrow from China to pay for.
If
and
right.
that
not
is exactly what we need to get rid of.
Absolutely.
Any, we need to not borrow. We need to not increase the debt. You know, I was telling, you know, okay, did anyone here watch the rumble between O'Reilly and Stewart?
No,
I didn't. I've seen
oh, my gosh, you guys got to. It was awesome. But anyway, O'Reilly was talking about the debt, and Stewart brought up the fact that Bush created $10 trillion worth of debt, and my jaw dropped that these people on the left actually believe that the $10 trillion left to Barack Obama was all accumulated under Bush. Because why did he assume that? Because Clinton left a surplus. No, he did not.
I know, it's
all,
funny.
The surplus that came from Clinton was borrowed money, first of all. Second of all, and because he increased taxes, but together the two created a surplus. But what happened was our debt under Clinton was $5.3 trillion when Bush inherited it. Bush created
right.
another $4.8 trillion. Now,
right. Right.
Now we have $6.2 trillion created by who? In four years, okay? The $5.3 that was left to Bush under Clinton, I mean, let's put it this way. Reagan created $480 billion of debt. Clinton, $800 billion of debt, okay? Every president before Bush created under $1 trillion. Bush was the first one to break the trillion. You want to know what? Barack Obama is the first one to break $5 trillion in 4 years, okay? This has got to stop. And what I did was I actually wrote to John Stewart. I wrote him a nice little email. And I said, you know what you got to do? Find the debt clock from before Bush was, go to 2004, basically. Watch how fast it spins. Then go to today's debt clock. Watch how fast it spins, okay?
Right.
You know that there's way too much increased spending, and that's why we're accumulating so much debt. The deficit
mm-hmm.
is completely different. There was no deficit when Clinton left, correct. There was no deficit. It was a surplus. See, those are opposite terms. One deficit means not enough money. Surplus means too much money. Now, they definitely didn't balance the budget that year either. They had a surplus. What did Bush do? Bush took our surplus, and he distributed it to all of us. He created a stimulus which increased total growth amongst the masses. What did Obama do with $700 billion of surplus? He went and gave it to his special friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's why we are the way we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is going on. And, you know, when John Stewart would dare say that $10 trillion was accumulated under Bush, I felt like I wanted to smack the kid.
You're getting that urge a lot. A little smack hand. I really want to smack some people. Thinking maybe it'll jar loose something inside that will actually.
I think it will actually me. I really hope he writes back. I doubt he will, but I hope so.
Yeah. So, because they don't understand. Because I get this same thing from the liberals, you know. It's like, oh, George, what? It's like, what are you talking about?
Right.
And it confuses me that they're coming up with such stupid things, because it's like, that's what are you talking about? You know, Bush only did $4 trillion in 8 years. That's a whole lot less than Obama's one term. And a lot of people miss, too, the $90 billion that he wasted on choosing green energy companies like Solyndra, when he could have hired 2 million teachers, you know, and yet now he wants the chance to hire those teachers. But you know what? Those teachers aren't going to create jobs.
Right.
That's just going to cost the taxpayer more money. And
there is no government function that creates a job. Nothing. There is no government function that actually creates a producing job.
Well, right. Yes, there is. There are government jobs.
They are jobs if they're taxpayer-funded jobs.
Exactly.
But they don't create a product. They don't produce.
And they're
right.
not
right.
creating
right.
more jobs.
There is no manufacturing job under
a service. So
they're not getting a turnaround in their money. They're just paying
right.
them with our tax dollars.
Exactly.
I totally understand where you are at that.
Right. And so...
Being you as workers at a factory or workers at a company or whatever you work at, we are producers, okay? Because we actually produce a product for the company, and then when we go home, we produce a living or an income for other people. But the government doesn't do that. The government is a service-oriented company, and the government
right.
does not produce a widget. They cannot sell what they produce. There is no market for them. And the people on the left just don't understand that. They think that the government produces jobs. These
I
jobs
know. And underneath, I was just going to say, under the government, you would assume there's like only three vocations out there, teacher, firefighter, and police officer. Like, no, there's no other jobs in the world that exist other than those three, according to the government.
Yeah, but policemen, what was it? Those three are
firefighters.
Are state jobs. Those are
right.
not government jobs.
Exactly.
They're jobs provided by the, but those are dictated to the states by, you know, supposedly the Constitution.
And exactly. But see, that's
right.
what he uses the stimulus money for. He gives it to the states to get more teachers. That's what he considers a stimulus to the state.
Well, here's
and
the thing about that.
It, though,
I don't think we need more teachers. I think we need better teachers. And I think
exactly.
we need the
right.
ones that are in there that ain't worth a crap to be shown the door. Show the, you know, let the screen door
but
hit
they're
you with the
protected
door.
By the union.
I mean, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Right, exactly.
But they're all protected by the union. You know, the union keeps child molesters on the dole until they die.
Right. And here's the thing. The only way to break those is to force the competitiveness of the market, and that's through school vouchers, that's through allowing parents choice. And this is why the unions fight this so badly, because they know
mm-hmm.
it will hurt their jobs. But we should not have to be sending our kids to schools that are where they're being taught things that we don't agree with, that have nothing to do with history or science or English or writing and reading. You know, the sexual education crap. Get it out of the schools. It doesn't belong there. It belongs
mm-hmm.
to the parent, you know. And this LBG stuff, no, doesn't belong in the schools. And this is the public schools are hurting themselves, because there's going to be more parents wanting to pull their kids out. And that's why they're fighting tooth and nail. And that's why the unions are going to turn out big. They'll be turning out for Obama. But that being said, I think we have a bigger base. Go ahead.
It's Wisconsin with... Scott Walker,
mm-hmm.
he won over
yeah,
the union and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and
crap.
A lot of union
That's
people voted for him.
Right,
because
exactly.
There's a difference between some of the unions that maybe work with local shops and the UAW and the SEIU, the teachers union, because those unions play politics and they put money into politics and they get kickbacks from Obama and his cronies
yep.
to play those politics. So, you know, but the average, you know, maybe union worker, like just a union against a local union with a job, there's a difference because they're not into those big politics and they're not using their money in that manner. So, but a lot of them did vote for Walker. So that also gives us a little hope in the election, which could bring us to the polls, which were good today, coming out with Romney in the lead, with him winning like 14% among independents, with him having a higher likability, and with him having more voter enthusiasm. So, you know, some really good numbers coming out today for us. And at this point, I just want to encourage everybody to get to the polls and vote and take as many people with you as you can and make sure they know it's so crucial to get out and vote in this election. Mm-hmm. And
I just wonder if what do you guys think about those wonderful job numbers out there?
Oh,
I think they're crock of crap.
Okay, right. Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, that's so funny. It's one of the doctors I work for. He goes, "I told you that would happen." I was like, "Yeah, you did." It's nonsense.
I mean, he actually predicted that they'd go below 8% this month.
Yeah, I figured it technically would, but.
Yeah, but how can
it? There's no technically about it. You know, the funny thing is, instead of, you know, they just added jobs that they normally subtract, because part-time jobs usually don't increase the
workforce,
unemployment rate. So this month, they just decided, oh, well, since there were 600,000 part-time jobs added, we'll add those in this time instead of decrease it, because usually that doesn't create a job. That's a underemployed job. But
exactly.
You got to love the true Americans in this country, like Jack Welch, who come out and say, no, this can't possibly be right. And then they gave him flack at Forbes, and so he resigned from the board at Forbes because of the flack he took from the liberals there. And he said, I don't need this crap.
He resigned over that?
Yes, he did.
When you look at the employment numbers, or unemployment numbers, you can't look at unemployment. You have to look at the gainfully employed before and after. The gainfully employed, those numbers tell you the exact situation. And we lost 200 million jobs over that.
And
you can't look at the unemployment because there's people that drop out. There's people that just don't look for it anymore.
I'll be awake.
You have to look at who's employed and who's not.
Right.
From the start to the end.
Right.
That's the numbers that you need to go by. Everybody sits there and touts on these unemployment numbers. Well, we created 100,000 jobs. Well, wait a minute. You lost 280,000. How are you talking that you created 100,000 jobs?
Because they don't go by net-net. They don't go by net-net. They just look at the created number. That's it.
They're going by what the CBO and all that kind of stuff puts out. But, I mean, you know, you can argue these numbers all day long and spin them, you know, any way you want to. But the thing is that, in my opinion, you have to look at who's employed and who's not. Not who's looking at, not who's on unemployment for what, 2 years now? Not who's off unemployment because they can't even find a job or they're not willing or whatever, for whatever reason. Those are not the numbers.
Yeah, the only thing is, when they got those 600,000 part-time jobs, all of them filed for unemployment because they're underemployed, and our federal government now does give them a check if they're not making what they could be making.
Well, when I lost my job in June of last year, and I was unemployed, and then somebody that I know was looking for some help, he said, you know, it's only a temporary position. So for the hours I didn't work, I put in for unemployment.
Hang on, guys, that's me.
So
I was looking up something and it had a video, sorry. Go ahead.
And then, like, the last week after a year, they said, so sad, too bad, you don't qualify anymore. and they dropped me like a hot potato. Now, I'm still at the job, and technically, it's still, so I don't get any vacation pay, and I'm working 40 hours a week. I don't get vacation, I don't get holiday. So when I don't work, I don't get paid. But this is by word of mouth, you know, and I'm not going back to unemployment or anything. But I didn't know how long that job was going to last either, this job that I'm still at a year later. So I can see how other, how people can do that. Because as we all know, it's really hard to make ends meet. And if you're working part time, I mean, this is where Romney needs to come in and get the job so people can work full time to get everybody off.
And then I'll get off because I kind of feel weird about being on a lady show, but anyway.
Hey, we're patriots. We talk about everything, even men things, so that's fine.
Just wait till Brenda starts talking about prostate cancer, okay?
Yes, we have done that before.
But,
okay.
You know, whoever, I just want to say, whoever was Mitt Handler or Mitt Romney's handler that the last debate should get that job. He should be the top guy because I think right now what they're doing is trying to put him in a bag and trying to, you know, fluff him over a little bit, ride the wave a little bit, that kind of thing. And he don't need that. He needs to get out there and be like he was at the debate because that's what people recognize and that's what people understand. And
right.
I see this happening. And I've seen it happen in other debates, and I've seen it happen in other presidential elections. And the thing is, this guy who put him on and said, Mitt, just go all out. I think that's what the guy basically did, whoever it was. It might have been a woman. I don't know. But
Rob Portman.
You know, that person needs to be in charge of Mitt Romney's campaign. And the rest of the handlers need to stay away because what he conveyed to the American people was a sense of likability, a sense of trust, a sense of that he would, what the hell he was doing, and that kind of thing. And that the rest of the handlers need to stay away, or we're going to end up with another McCain or McClain.
Yeah. Well, that was Rob Portman that was actually with him working on him for the debate. And
well,
actually, on the.
Rob Portman played the part of Obama during the debate.
He played his debate. Person that he was debating against, but I'm saying that the handler that actually
the actual coach,
because there's coaches and there's, you know, when you get into politics, it's a dirty game, man. You got all these people involved and all that. Cause everybody's got a bright idea, okay? But whoever had the bright idea to get Romney on stage and say go attack him like a pit bull had the bright idea, and that guy or that person should be head of the campaign, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
They've also changed a little bit of strategy on the campaign trail because they're actually out there now. And, you know, Mitt Romney never liked to talk about himself or what he did in the past, but now he's starting to tell stories of things that he's done or you know, like the what we who watched the RNC saw the people come and testify about how he helped this kid who was dying, you know, in the hospital. And now he's starting to share those stories on the campaign trail, which will make him more human. So I think that's also somewhat a good strategy to humanize him for people because he's just not comfortable talking about himself. And to some people that comes off as that he's, you know, stuck up and he's a rich guy and he doesn't care about people, which is from what I have actually saw and learned since he's become our candidate is not true. This is a man who really cares about people, and nothing is beneath him. I mean, and he's out there tearing out a tree by its roots with his son for this man who couldn't tear the tree up, you know, that was burned in a fire. I mean, this is a man who rode on the back of a garbage truck when he was governor because he wanted to see how each person functioned in his city.
Oh, but didn't you see his own garbage man? His own garbage man
the invisible guy.
Yeah, and he says exactly what Mitt Romney said in his book. He says, I felt invisible. Mitt Romney said, I felt invisible. And, I mean, I'm like, this
because
guy
he was,
read
you know,
his
he
book
was, the,
was fed the lines from someone who read his book.
Yeah,
and they're lying through their buttholes.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, Romney was governor, and nobody recognized him because he's riding on the back of a garbage truck.
Right.
You know, so you just kind of look over those people. So, and for them to use that, and it's a joke in the first place. I can't imagine anybody
actually. Did you read the book? Did you read Mitt Romney's book yet?
The book yet.
Well, there's a part in there when he was playing a garbage man. He was next to a construction crew, and he got kind of flustered, and he pulled the wrong lever, and he dumped all the trash in the middle of the street. Did you hear that?
Did you hear that? Yeah, he pulled the wrong lever,
and instead of compacting the trash, he dumped the trash into the middle of the street. And then the construction guy right next to him says, good one, Mitt. Gonna clean that up.
Oh, my God, that's too funny.
That is funny.
Well,
that is funny.
Well, listen, people, I need to take off here. I got some jerky I'm cooking, man. I don't even know if I can eat it. It is hot. But Barb, you got your T-shirt. That'll be out to you as soon as I get them. And if you got, Brenda, if you got the other winner, just forward them along to me somehow.
Okay, we'll do that. I don't think anybody actually forwarded, but... we'll just keep promoting this, and hopefully we got some other Conservative Nation radio shows coming up. Billy, yours is going to be Thursday?
Friday this week because the debate's on Thursday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Friday at 7?
Yeah, it's at 7 p.m. Central, so 8 p.m. Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern, and anybody listening out there, we are doing a promotion for Atlas Shrugged, which comes out on Friday, part 2. We want you to get out and see this movie. It is an excellent movie, great plot line, and something that we think everybody needs to see. And we're going to be giving away some T-shirts and things on Conservative Nation Radio for those listening in. So you want to encourage your friends to tune in and take a listen. We have Red, Bright, and Blue on Saturdays. And we have... Patriot Soldiers on, that's not right.
Soldiers of Patriotism
on Sundays. So you can check the times. It's Conservative Nation Radio. And thank you all for calling in. Thank you, Bing, for joining us tonight. Thank you, Barbara, for calling in.
Thanks.
Thank you, Billy. I'm going to take us out with my Reagan Choices clip because I love my Reagan Choices clip. So everybody have a good night and thanks for tuning in.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, 6 times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. Our government is in business to the extent of owning more than 19,000 businesses covering 47 different lines of activity. This amounts to a fifth of the total industrial capacity of the United States. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us and at the moment is more imminent. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose, would unhesitatingly vote against it. We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course, the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine, Congressman Farrand introduced the Farrand Bill. This was the idea that all people of Social Security age should be brought under a program of compulsory health insurance. Now, this would not only be our senior citizens, this would be the dependents, and those who are disabled. This would be young people if they are dependents of someone eligible for Social Security. Now, Congressman Foran brought the program out on that idea of just for that particular group of people. But Congressman Foran was subscribing to this foot-in-the-door philosophy because he said, if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll see everyone next week.